Welcome to the Brainstorm, episode 105. We've got a new segment for everyone, Talking Tesla, and we've got Kathy joining us for the inaugural segment, and then we're going to dive into OpenAI Developer Day. But this came up. There was a Reuters article last week talking about Elon's upcoming pay package, right? We have the annual meeting coming up early November. And so, Kathy and Brett, it would be great to get your opinion on this. And, you know, I don't know if in history there's ever been a less paid person for more value created, but not to anchor everyone on that. Kathy, what's your reaction?
Well, in terms of the Reuters article, yes, I think it's ridiculous. First of all, what I'll say is when we saw this pay package, we had a similar reaction to the very first time that Elon proposed a pay package. And we said, hey, you know, that looks like our model or a variation of it. And of course, we had not talked to him about it, but we were saying, wow, if he can do this, you know, because we were pushing our model saying, you know, if they nail this, this is what would happen. But our expectations were high, and everybody thought we were crazy out there when we put our expectations out there. And in the last package, he accomplished those expectations 2 years earlier than we expected him to. So that comp package certainly motivated him. And we think it's much more than money that motivates him. It's the scaling of new technologies that are going to transform the way we live, work, breathe, you know, in terms of the environment as well. And the same with this one. I mean, these are extremely ambitious targets. Now, we know from studying learning curves that the targets are possible if everything goes right. They're possible. But just to give you a sense, if you take sort of the midpoint of the schedule for EBITDA goals, $210 billion right now from $11 billion, that would be over the next 7.5 years, a 49% compound annual rate of increase in EBITDA. I don't think there are very many companies that have accomplished that. In fact, we've done a quick study and we haven't found any. Maybe in recent years, there have been a few companies that have been able to deliver, you know, 2 or 3 years at that rate, but, you know, 7.5 years compounded at 49%. And that only gets him halfway through this package. He'd have to compound EBITDA at 62%. To hit the whole pay package. Now, I'll say the same thing here. You know, we have in our models the scaling of robo-taxis, but we have very little in there for humanoid robots, Optimus. And like Elon, we believe that's an even bigger market out there. So I think if this does motivate him to accelerate the movement into humanoid robotics, that's a win-win for shareholders as well. And I'll just conclude by saying, you know, and this was the first voiding of Elon's pay package. I believe, this is what I put on X, I believe the Delaware court decision forcing Tesla to void the March 2018 vote on Elon's performance-based pay package is un-American, an assault on investor rights, and an insult to the board of directors of one of the most stunningly successful companies in the world. And I would add, led by the most productive human being on earth, and a human being who attracts incredible talent, people who want to solve the world's hardest problems. This is a win-win for all of us if Elon succeeds this time around the way that he did the last time around. And I do hope that the appeals court does do the right thing, actually, and reward Elon that March 2018 package to begin with. He's still dealing with that and has not been paid anything, no salary. Whoever would do that? Whoever, I guarantee you, that Reuters journalist would never work for nothing in hopes of attaining a goal like this. Just wouldn't, maybe couldn't. But so, you know, I think it's case closed. I've been shocked that this is even a debate anymore.
It's kind of like if you have the option to extend, if Steve Jobs were still around and you had the option to extend his contract and actually give him more control of Apple, you absolutely would. It's the same here with Elon. There's like, it's in Tesla's best interest to give him more control and power within the company. And the option value on maniacally going after the humanoid robot opportunity is itself, you know, worth extending him on this. I think actually, maybe in contrast to you, Kathy, I think these goals are achievable. That's how we've modeled the company. I think
absolutely. I do. Yeah. I believe them too. But that is, we're using Wright's law, and you know, the and very much Wright's law is a function of unit growth. COVID happened in the middle of our last modeling, and so our EV sales fell short, but much closer to reality than any other analyst out there was projecting. So unit growth can disappoint. We don't know if we'll have another pandemic. We don't know what is going to happen to throw unit growth off. And that is key to our modeling, of course.
Well, I think it's interesting to dissect the critiques, at least that I've heard, and would be interested in other critiques. But you know, there's the critique, it's too much, right? And I feel like there, people are just looking at it as an absolute number, as opposed to, it's like a very small slice of a growing pie. And so it's not taking something that exists and giving it to him. It's, he's growing something and he's taking a portion of what's being grown. And then there's the other, which is not just that it's too big, but it's too big and too easy. And obviously not,
that's crazy.
not financial advice, but if you think that's true, then you should certainly be owning the company.
Yeah.
Right. It's like,
You can't have it both ways.
Part of the metrics are this going to a multi $8 trillion market cap.
It's a right? huge, that's one of the, it's the a huge things. Win on both
Tesla's
sides.
Tesla's trading at 1.3. Right. This really does seem like a win-win for shareholders and for people who really want Tesla to continue being at the cutting edge. And it seems like a lot of the critique is, I really don't understand who is forming the critique here if you're a shareholder.
If we're right on what's going to happen here, and Elon and team, because he surrounded himself, obviously, by a brilliant team, if they do deliver, my guess is we're going to look back on this conversation today, and it will be in the history books. How could Reuters have written that article? How could, given how transformational this company is?
And I think,
Kathy, to your sorry, go ahead.
No, I would just, my one perspective on this, I think it's a win-win-win, right? It's a win for shareholders, it's a win for Elon, but most importantly, it's a win for society. Because if he does hit these metrics on robo-taxis, on humanoids, everyone benefits, assuming you have access to this technology. So it really is, I don't know why you would want to bet against this. I don't know why you would want to not incentivize this human to go after and achieve this. To me, it seems backwards. It seems almost, you know, repressive to say no to this.
One of the key shareholders that I think people often miss in these conversations, everyone thinks, oh, Elon, right, you know, he's doing this. Shareholders, oh, you have BlackRock and other institutions. It's like the most important shareholders are the employees, right? Mm-hmm. At Tesla. Every single employee is, you know, incentivized with stock. And having Elon fully incentivized alongside those employees is going to be an incredible wealth generation for everyday employees. And I think,
absolutely,
you know, that doesn't get the headlines, but if this pay package goes through and he succeeds, there's going to be a lot of extremely well-off Tesla employees of every level.
Well, just think about what people coming. Sorry, Brett. I just think about the number of people who come up to us when we're walking around and say, you know, thank you for your research on Tesla. Thank you. I bought the stock. And yes, this is not advice on this one, but I bought the stock and I was able to buy a house or educate my child. And I mean, it's remarkable how many people have come up to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, Kathy, they're not stopping us on the street.
Well, they should be. You deserve more credit than I do. You did the research, so they should be. But they do say, then you should know. They have often come up and just expressed such gratitude, even to the point of emotion, to be honest. And that's, of course, you're absolutely right, Sam, on the employees. They certainly deserve this. But the people who have actually risked any of their capital, and most of these people that come up to me are young people. So it has really moved the needle in their lives.
Another way to think about this is rather than, this is a protection mechanism against corporate sloth. As in, when companies get big and companies get rich, the natural tendency is for the people to be like, I'm just going to sit back and collect rent, you know, and you see it in large companies. I mean, I think I see all kinds of signs of it in Apple, for sure. One of the really unique characteristics about Tesla as it currently exists is even in the small corners of the Tesla universe, there are clearly engineers who are doing really hard work to ship kind of amazing little updates to parts that don't like impact directly the bottom line. You know, even like the marginal safety improvements they're making to their cars. It's like, who cares? You're already the safest car in the world. This is not something that's going to drive an incremental sale, but it is going to save a life. Mm-hmm. And so forcing down throughout the organization this urgency to continue improving in all of its little kind of aspects, and having a culture of continuous innovation pushed right out to the edges is something that Elon has proven very good at driving, both in his recruitment and the pressure he places on his direct reports, in his skip meetings, in his like intolerance to like a lot of layering within the organization. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the event that this happens, in the event that Tesla is able to deliver on Robotaxi and deliver all this cash flow, you want him to have more control so that that culture can remain, that culture of continuous improvement, rather than a, hey, we're going to like occupy this spot. And kind of, yes, Optimus will be something we churn on, but don't really drive. And the kind of like natural monopoly position we'll have in ride hail in different geographies is something we'll be satisfied to scrape dollars off of. And then we as humans would be stuck in Teslas that get up to a certain level of performance and don't continue to perform or improve. And I think that kind of with him kind of instilled in the spot, incentivized, given kind of like basically the motivation to continue to like lean in and press on the accelerator, I think you'll end up with just a broadly better set of products. Yes, more lucrative to Tesla, but also, like you're saying, better for the world. Like, I really think that's the reason this is, it's actually an inexpensive contract to be like, yes, please take more control here so you can keep driving or keep having the cars drive us.
Amazing.
If he and his team are able to deliver on this, and we do think it's possible, anything can go wrong, COVID went wrong, but then Tesla epitomizes what I often say about our portfolios, which we are running deep value portfolios if you give us a five-year investment time horizon. This Tesla has the opportunity to prove us right once again.
Amazing. Kathy, thank you for joining us
thank
for
you.
Talking
thank you.
Tesla.
My pleasure.
All right. All right, Brett and Nick, next topic is OpenAI Dev Day. Our last week, the prediction market, the ledger section, we took a bet. And the odds, it turned out, were going up so much because of that developer day on the calendar. And people were expecting a browser to be announced, which it was not. So currently got a nice...
But great due diligence by us.
Paper profit.
Not even realized that there was a dev day coming up.
Well, like maybe Brett knew. That's why he picked that market. But a browser was not announced. Brett, do you want to walk us through what they did unveil?
Yeah, instead of announcing a browser, they're basically going to take web apps and pull it onto their, you know, specific platform. So I think there are two major, one at a high level, it's really clear that the OpenAI team is using kind of their tools to be really rapid at delivering innovation and product, because they are just shipping a lot of stuff and a lot of stuff that is a meaningful advance on how their products work. Not just, hey, here's a better model, but these are ways in which you can use our products to kind of like be more productive and better. So we talked about Sora 2, like video generation, and they're competing, like Imagine or Grok's Imagine is amazing as well. Here, it was really targeted at kind of turning ChatGPT into a more robust platform. So they announced basically an application developer kit that allows their demo day partners were like Figma and some others, but allows you to kind of directly query your chatbot. Hey, I need to, I don't know, look at real estate. And then it'll say, hey, do you want to use Zillow to do that? And it'll natively pull in kind of like an implementation of the Zillow app that then you can natural language query, and you can even instruct, you know, at the ChatGPT level, the agent to find you kind of the specific houses you're looking for in the specific region. And it has your entire context of all the things you've done in chat. And so, we've talked about OpenAI and AI chatbots generally potentially being a new operating system. This is more evidence of that, where they're using, you know, they're putting out developer kits for people with applications to create agentic-like behavior within the chatbot using kind of the power of OpenAI's tool. And they have such good distribution right now, you know, on the order of now it's 800 million weekly actives. I think this will attract a lot of teams to develop apps specifically for ChatGPT. And not least because Figma traded up like 10% just because they were on the stupid demo day, which I think is a little absurd, but it is a like big, like, flashing light to anybody that's out there that, hey, you know, this might be a lucrative spot in which to kind of develop applications. So that was the first piece, and maybe we'll stop there. Nick, what do you think? Clearly they're going to kill Apple. I know you agree now.
Yeah. Right. I mean, this is everything Apple should have and did hint at wanting to do, right? Like I watching this, I'm like, okay, Apple actually did create the same framework for Apple Intelligence, and we have no idea if it's gone anywhere, but it was called AppIntense, right? It was being able to take portions of your application and have it be surfaced by Siri through Apple Intelligence. But as we know, they couldn't even get past Genmoji. So like, it's frustrating to watch, but it's also amazing to see another company look at the vision and understand that, you know, I think what you said, Brett, chatbots are more than just a singular application. This is a new abstraction layer. This is going to be a primary input for us as consumers. And we do think it is a new operating system in the same way that, you know, we went from graphical user interfaces into mobile, and we've had all this app economy. Like, I think this is now hopefully leads the way into not having to open up 6 or 7 different apps to service one, you know, use case. Instead, you just have to query OpenAI and it goes into all these different applications to surface the insight or what you want it to do to begin with. So I think it's great. I am actually, the one thing I'm concerned about is how this is going to be viewed from the Apples and the Googles of the world, which still very much, you know, if you were to give them any credit, they still own the current operating systems, and they don't look favorably on app stores within.
Yeah, you can't build a platform on top of my platform,
right? And this is kind of that. So yeah, I mean, look, they announced it. They're in partnership with Apple. They must have a way and a framework to get around the current guardrails. So it's happening. But I find it's almost extremely negative signal from Apple. Like, Brett, you were talking about, if Steve Jobs was still around, there's no way this was happening. No way. Like, this is such
a... Apple still could... I mean, if you imagine you're in your chat bot on your phone and you're going through the set of motions and you end up at Figma and then you want to upgrade to the pro version of Figma within the set of motions. Yeah, does Apple try to like extract rent out of that?
Yeah, there you go.
And I think that at least... I'm sure that like the app developer absolutely won't want to pay rent, and OpenAI will try to protect the app developers from paying rent. And that's kind of like the and I think legally Apple has probably like thinner stilts to stand on there, given, you know, the long Epic fight they've had with Epic. And I suspect that piece of leverage they have is pretty reedy right now. But that's where they could try to draw the line. And right now, you know, there's not at least initially a ready mechanism by which that monetization takes place, at least not announced during the developer day, but they'll cross that bridge. And I think on the Google side, Google should clearly ship this. They have the capability. Yeah. You know, they may even have like this. It's kind of an obvious move, and I'm sure they're trying to work on it and get it to market in something that looks like this way. And so I would expect that they'll have competitive kind of like a competitive set of actions that they go after here. And so then if you're on an Android device and you could use ChatGPT, but Gemini is going to be the default and easier, and they'll try to, you know, it could really even clean up the Play Store if they did this, I think. I mean, I think it could make their on-device experience more competitive versus Apple's, just because Apple has been so slow to get to the mark here.
Yeah, absolutely. All right,
let's keep going. What else was announced? Rapid fire.
Okay, so then that's like on the, hey, consumer uses chatbot to get to apps level, but then it's like, hey, I'm basically a software developer and I want to create either enterprise or consumer facing or B2B, whatever. I want to create an agent inside my set of apps that I have out there. So they created, and this is something that there are, I think, other startups that were already doing that were gaining traction, and OpenAI said, hey, that's a good idea. Let's just do that ourselves, where it's like you can wireframe together an agent. So you imagine you might call one agent to say, hey, kind of categorize this, list of items into groceries versus clothing, and then another agent to say, you know, find the least expensive one of those items, and then another to check the work of the third, and then a third to go out and negotiate pricing or something. So you can wireframe together the different LLM actions to create a full agentic type experience. And so it's almost like being able to design. Imagine you were to lay out to an employee, like, these are the things you need to do over the course of your day. You have this set of actions you do, and then do this set of actions. Then you have another employee that's supposed to look over his shoulder and be like, oh, did he get the pricing right? Or is this best price? And so you can kind of like create that wireframe, and then it allows you to easily package together the kind of like the chain set of LLM actions, AI model actions, to deliver kind of like a package agent that then you can run in your application.
It's like
run in your endpoint.
It's like playing manager mode on like FIFA or something, right? It's like you lay it all out, and then you get a prompt back from the agent and says, Nick says, I'm not going to do this project unless I twisted my knee. And you're like, oh, no, I got to sub in a new agent.
Right. Well, and you can imagine in building these agents, like the reason OpenAI is able to kind of externalize this is because they've had to do this work to deliver GPT-5 at least, which has all these agentic capabilities. Like, when does it go to the web? How does it like check itself to know that the material it's surfacing is relevant to the person's query? That's something that people that are in vertical specialties will also want to do. And there are certain kind of like, you know, in in these agents, you will want to have like evaluation functions that are measuring the health of the output that's coming out in some way. And you'll want to have some kind of like fail function that, you know, elegantly degrades if things go wrong. And so there's some, call it puzzle pieces, that are easily, that a lot of different people will have to use, and they're providing those to people. And it, and from a strategic perspective, if you develop your agents to this framework, it's going to be harder to get off of OpenAI, because then you're going to have to rebuild the framework elsewhere. So it makes it easy to develop, but hard to leave. So I think that will, you know, it'll go some way to supporting their API business and making it stickier. I think the API layer is heavily competitive, and there's lots of kind of like churn, because people design to a certain output function, and then somebody else offers like similar performance at less price, and they're like, sure, we'll just switch over. So this is a way to make that API business potentially more stable when you provide these developer tools that make it harder for you to shift.
Yep.
All right, Nick, it's your week for the ledger.
I am.
What are we betting on?
We are.
What are we predicting?
We are.
So what are we predicting?
And I chose this market because, one, it's topical given what happened over the weekend, late into Friday. But we are looking at November 1st. Will there be 100% tariffs on China in effect by November 1st? The market is currently sitting at 13% chance. There was some tweeting back and forth over the, or posting back and forth over the weekend.
I think it was Truth Socialing.
Yes.
Actually, back
and Truth Socialing over the weekend. The market dropped 41% since it started, but it's currently sitting at 13% odds. I picked this partly because I think that this is, you know, a really interesting use case if you think about how you would maybe create your own portfolio around news like this, right? Like, there would be certain stocks and sectors to go after. Maybe you go in defense or however you want to play it, right? U.S. manufacturing. Now you just have direct access to the decision itself, which I think is kind of what is so interesting about prediction markets. It gives you like the specific event and being able to place a wager on that, either for or against. And so instead of hedging your book in like separate ways, you can now just go after the event itself. And so that's why I picked it, because I think it's...
Yeah, and forget about being a financial market participant. What if you're selling goods out of China?
Right.
And it's like, I need to hedge. Right. I need to perpetually hedge a month in the future to make sure that the sales I've made, I'm not having to go back to my customers and say, hey, by the way, I have to charge you twice as much. And or if I do have to do that, I get compensated for the fact that that happened.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a bespoke insurance contract for the people who are exposed to this.
Yes. And I'll throw in a third element. For me, it always bothers prediction markets on things where there's no information that the market is eliciting is like only a half use of the prediction market, right? So it's like for sports betting, it's like, sure, maybe one of the trainers knows something, whatever. I don't know if it necessarily surfaces through those odds, because there's such a market that's just matching kind of sports book spreads, whereas something like this is a great way that surfaces information that might not otherwise surface into the market, right? So it's like, you know, if you're in the circle and you've got intuition on this, in theory, you're participating in this market ahead of November 1st. But
I will also give my prediction. I'm going with no. I'm a fan of peace and love and free trade. So I'm going with no. It's all going to work out. She just had a bad moment, right? We're going with no. So I'm going to look for the 13% gain.
I'm also citing no here.
Yeah, me too. I mean, the taco trade always wins. I think that like there's, you know, it's pretty clear. Trump like said, don't take away our rare earths. We'll wage, you know, nuclear economic war on us. And then there was clearly some back channel communication over the weekend saying, hey, we're all, you know, just kind of like sparring here. We're not really fighting yet, that caused them to back off. And or China was like, oh, these are the things we have behind the shed that you weren't really aware of that we could actually do. And we measure kind of our strategic ambitions over centuries. You measure them over quarters. And then therefore we're willing to take this pain for 20 years, whereas you're not willing to take it for 3 months. Net, I think that there's there's definitely downsides for both parties and not kind of like being reasonably semi-rational here. I don't know.
All right.
Also, you could get tariffs at 75%. You'd still win on the contract. So, I mean, 100% is like...
That's true. You're assuming no negotiation.
Our first consensus bet. We're 2 weeks in and we're already agreeing with each other. This is going to end up being a terrible segment.
Yeah, well, you picked something with long odds. I mean,
I know. It's a, you know, you got to go closer to 50-50 odds.
All right. Yeah. All right. Well, that was...
But it is, Brett, you make an interesting point. And it does seem as though having it land exactly on 100 would be extremely surprising. So maybe there's a free 13% here.
Yeah, you can win by losing here, basically. And then on the rare earth side, I heard an analogy where it's kind of like saying that all of something is produced in one spot in the world and therefore we're at huge risk of it is like saying, well, a river is going through this direction on a floodplain and therefore if you block it, you're not going to get water at the end. No, it'll just go around. So, you know, we're going to put rare earths aren't actually rare. We're going to pull them out of Alaska and everywhere else. And, you know, I think that there's given like a short amount of time, you can actually kind of spin this stuff up if you take away the regulatory restriction to overdoing so. So.
All right.
Innovation.
Go dig up some rare earth. Dig up your backyard and begin finding some tantalum.
Nick has to jump. So maybe he drops here. But and maybe this is the end of the recording. This is the appendix to the brainstorm now. Three people won the Nobel Prize for creative destruction type papers. Have you read any of them ever?
I admit that I haven't. I did read a summary of their research and how, like, basically two of them totally disagree on whether or not growth is going to continue. And I think economics is, like, a challenging subject to call science still. It's more like we come up with fancy math that roughly maps reality but is, like, not necessarily predictive in any meaningful sense. And I think that I mean, I have my own growth forecast. It's definitely different from them. I think it's where's my Nobel Prize? It's definitely consensus that you need technology in order to drive productivity. And that's like the whole game in terms of human uplift. And so then the disagreement resolves to, are we still creating technology that's meaningful or not? One way to approach it would be, well, there's a certain amount of technology out there. We randomly come along technologies, but then like each marginal technology is roughly the size of the previous one. And so we're kind of like on a percentage basis, the technologies are less and less meaningful. Or there's another where it's like, hey, we randomly come across technologies. Each technology is randomly meaningful, but you can also combine them together to create a new technology. And if you do that, then that's also randomly like impactful. And your expectations between those two sets of, you know, kind of models of the world is one, you plane off, the other, you explode in terms of economic growth.
And OpenAI just launched an app store on top of an app store. So we clearly know exploding up.
Yes. I mean, I think it's like, you know, technologies as puzzle pieces that combine together yield more than the sum of their parts seems intrinsically accurate.
I agree. All right. We'll see everyone next week.
ARK Investment Management LLC is an SEC registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other. And therefore, ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK, and investors should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results.
Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARC assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARC and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARC believes to be reliable. However, ARC does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.